You're listening to The Babe Bunker, and I'm your host, Amelia Eagle. A lot about what's so cool about being a kid is exploring. Whether you want to explore outer space or underwater in a submarine, or maybe even down a rabbit hole in your own backyard, life is never short on places and ways to explore. Stay tuned this next half an hour as we look up to the stars and dig in to get subterranean. We're in for quite an adventure. First up, we have resident scientist Chloe Ivanov, teaching us not only to reach for the stars, but how to take a closer look at them.
Hello, little listeners. How are you feeling today? What is the weather like outside? Can you feel the changes in temperature as we move into late fall? I had to scrape frost off my car windows this week. Along with temperatures getting colder, we are losing daylight every day. In fact, today we've lost about 5 minutes of daylight. Have no fear, because on December 22nd, we will start gaining all that daylight back. In the meantime, enjoy the beautiful night sky with more stars than you can count. Do you know how many stars there are in the sky? Do you know what a constellation is? Have you ever looked through a telescope? Stick around and listen to learn more and make your own telescope at home.
Twinkle, twinkle, lucky star. Can you send me luck from where you are? Can you make a rainbow shine that far? Twinkle, twinkle, lucky star.
To make your own telescope at home, you will need these items: 2 empty paper towel tubes, scissors, masking tape, markers, paint, stickers, crayons, or anything else you desire to decorate your telescope. 2 convex lenses. These can come from 2 magnifying glass pieces or from a pair of old reading glasses that no one is using. Ask your parents for help. Make sure these glasses are for reading and not glasses used to just see better. If you can't find old reading glasses, you can look at the thrift store or order convex lenses online.
Can you really make a wish come true? Or do you shine on just a chosen few? Is it over? Have I gone too far? Twinkle, twinkle, lucky star.
First, choose one of your paper towel tubes to be the inner tube. Cut that tube lengthwise, or hot dog style, all the way up the side. Wrap one edge of the cut side slightly over the other edge and hold it in place with one hand. Then, insert the cut tube into the other paper towel tube. Let go of the inner tube so that it can expand inside the outer tube. Make sure the inner tube can slide smoothly inside the outer tube. If the inner tube is all crinkly and wrinkly and won't slide smoothly, then take it out and wrap the edge a little more carefully and tightly. Reinsert the inner tube into the other paper towel tube until it is just right. Next, grab one of your lenses. Notice how one side of the lens bows or curves up, almost like a little bitty hill on the glass, and the other side doesn't. Using masking tape, secure one of the lenses to the outer edge of the inner tube. The curve of the lens should be facing the inside of the tube. Be careful to only tape around the rim of the lenses so you have enough space to see through the lenses. Then, take your second lens and secure it to the outer edge of the outer tube, with the curve of the lens pointing outside the tube. It's okay if your lenses are bigger than the tube, just be careful with the tape. Now you may use your telescope. Place your eye against the lens of the inner tube. Aim your telescope at faraway eagles or tall spruce treetops. Be careful not to look at the sun with your telescope, because that can hurt your eyes. You can focus your telescope by sliding the inner tube in and out until the image becomes clear. How does this telescope work? Well, your telescope is a refracting telescope because it uses lenses to help gather more light than your eye can possibly do on its own. The scope uses 2 lenses to bend light, which makes an object appear closer than it really is. The size of the image produced by the telescope depends on the curvature of the lens. Lenses with different curvatures will change the magnification of the telescope. Now that you have your telescope, you can use it during the day and at night for better star viewing. According to National Geographic, there are over 300 billion stars in our Milky Way galaxy alone. A galaxy is a huge collection of gas, dust, and billions of stars and their solar systems. In our solar system, the closest star is our sun. All other stars are light years away. One of the most helpful stars besides our sun is Polaris, or the North Star. Polaris is special because it stays nearly in the same spot while the rest of the North Sky moves around it. There are also famous groups of stars, such as the Big Dipper. You may have seen this on our Alaska state flag. It's called the Big Dipper because it looks like a giant spoon. The Big Dipper is one of many constellations, which are groups of stars that make up a certain pattern or picture in the sky. You can use your telescope to better see constellations like the Big Dipper or our special North Star, Polaris. For best star viewing, try to find a time or place with minimal light pollution. It's also best when the moon isn't so bright and the sky is free of clouds. A website called Sky Maps allows you to download free maps of the sky so you can learn about different constellations before you go stargazing. You can also download apps on your phone that help identify stars, planets, and constellations. Check out our local library for books on stars and astronomy. Even better, while stargazing, create your own constellations by connecting the stars into a shape like an animal, imaginary or real, a spaceship, your best friend, the letters of your name, or maybe a pumpkin. Make sure to dress warm and bring some hot cocoa for your stargazing adventure.
Twinkle, twinkle, lucky star. Can you send me love where you are? Can you make a rainbow shine that far? Twinkle, twinkle, lucky star.
Now that we've gone into space, let's switch gears and get back to where Alice ended up when she went down the rabbit hole. Feel free to grab some paper and something to draw with as you listen along to this next story.
Hi, kids. If you remember last week, we were reading Alice in Wonderland. Today I'm going to read to you Alice in Wonderland Chapter 2, The Pool of Tears. Now, we left Alice. She had just eaten a cake, and her body was growing and growing. "Curiouser and curiouser," cried Alice. She was so much surprised that for the moment she quite forgot how to speak good English. "Now I'm opening out like the largest telescope that ever was. Goodbye, feet." For when she looked down at her feet, they seemed to be almost out of sight. They were getting so far off. "Oh, my poor little feet. I wonder who will put on your shoes and stockings for you now, dears. I'm sure I shan't be able. I shall be a great deal too far off to trouble myself about you. You must manage the best way you can. But I must be kind to them," thought Alice, "or perhaps they won't walk the way I want to go. Let me see. I'll give them a new pair of boots every Christmas." And she went on planning to herself how she would manage it. They must go by the carrier, she thought. And how funny it'll seem sending presents to one's own feet. And how odd the directions will look. Alice's right foot, hearth rug, near the fender, with Alice's love. Oh, dear, what nonsense I'm talking. Just then, her head struck against the roof of the hall. In fact, she was now more than 9 feet high, and she at once took the little golden key and hurried off to the garden door. Poor Alice. It was as much as she could do, lying down on one side, to look through into the garden with one eye. But to get through was more hopeless than ever. She sat down and began to cry again. "You ought to be ashamed of yourself," said Alice. "A great girl like you." She might well say that. "To go on crying in this way. Stop this moment, I tell you." But she went on all the same, shedding gallons of tears until there was a large pool all around her, about 4 inches deep and reaching half down the hall. After a time, she heard a little pattering of feet in the distance, and she hastily dried her eyes to see what was coming. It was a white rabbit returning, splendidly dressed, with a pair of white kid gloves in one hand and a large fan in the other. He came trotting along in a great hurry, muttering to himself as he came, "Oh, the Duchess, the Duchess! Oh, won't she be savage if I've kept her waiting?" Alice felt so desperate that she was ready to ask help of anyone. So, when the rabbit came near her, she began in a low, timid voice, "If you please, sir." The rabbit started violently, dropped the white kid gloves and the fan, and scurried away into the darkness as hard as he could go. Alice took up the fan and gloves, and as the hall was very hot, she kept fanning herself all the time as she went on talking. "Dear, dear, how queer everything is today. And yesterday things went on just as usual. I wonder if I've changed in the night. Let me think. Was I the same when I got up this morning? I almost think I can remember feeling a little different. But if I'm not the same, the next question is, who in the world am I? Ah, that's the great puzzle." And she began thinking over all the children she knew that were of the same age as herself to see if she could have been changed for any one of them. "I'm sure I'm not Ada," she said, "for her hair goes in such long ringlets, and mine doesn't go in ringlets at all. And I'm sure I can't be Mabel, for I know all sorts of things, and she, oh, she knows such a very little. Besides, she is she, and I'm I. And, oh dear, how puzzling it all is. I'll try if I know all the things I used to know. Let me see. 4 times 5 is 12, and 4 times 6 is 13, and 4 times 7 is, oh dear, I shall never get to 20 at that rate. However, the multiplication table doesn't signify. Let's try geography. London is the capital of Paris, and Paris is the capital of Rome. And Rome, no, that's all wrong, I'm certain. I must have been changed for Mabel. I'll try and say, how doth the little? And she crossed her hands on her lap as if she were saying lessons and began to repeat it. But her voice sounded hoarse and strange, and the words did not come the same as they used to. How doth the little crocodile improve his shining tail? And pour the waters of the Nile onto every golden scale. How cheerfully he seems to grin, how neatly spread his claws, and welcome little fishes in with a gently smiling jaw. I'm sure those are not the right words, said poor Alice, and her eyes filled with tears again as she went on. I must be Mabel after all, and I shall have to go and live in that poky little house, and have next to no toys to play with, and oh, so ever many lessons to learn. No, I've made my mind up about it. If I'm Mabel, I'll stay down here. It'll be no use their putting their heads down and saying, come up again, dear. I shall only look up and say, who am I then? Tell me that first. And then, if I like being that person, I'll come up. If not, I'll stay down here till I'm somebody else. But, oh dear, cried Alice with such a sudden burst of tears. I do wish they would put their heads down. I am so very tired of being all alone here. As she said this, she looked down at her hands and was surprised to see that she had put on one of the rabbit's little white kid gloves while she was talking. How can I have done that? She thought. I must be growing small again. She got up and went to the table to measure herself by it and found that, as nearly as she could guess, she was now about 2 feet high and was going on shrinking rapidly. She soon found out that the cause of this was the little fan she was holding, and she dropped it hastily just in time to avoid shrinking away altogether. That was a narrow escape, said Alice, a good deal frightened at the sudden change, but very glad to find herself still in existence. And now for the garden. And she ran with all speed back to the little door. But alas, the little door was shut again, and the little golden key was lying on the glass table as before. And things are worse than ever, thought the poor child. For I never was so small as this before, never, and I declare it's too bad, that it is. As she said these words, her foot slipped, and in another moment, splash, she was up to her chin in salt water. Her first idea was that she had somehow fallen into the sea. And in that case, I can go back by railway, she said to herself. Alice had been to the seaside once in her life and had come to the general conclusion that wherever you go on the English coast, you find a number of bathing machines in the sea, some children digging in the sand with wooden spades, then a row of lodging houses, and behind them a railway station. However, she soon made out that she was in the pool of tears which she had wept when she was 9 feet high. I wish I hadn't cried so much, said Alice as she swam about trying to find her way out. I shall be punished for it now, I suppose, by being drowned in my own tears. That will be a queer thing, to be sure. However, everything is queer today. Just then, she heard something splashing about in the pool a little way off, and she swam nearer to make out what it was. At first, she thought it must be a walrus or a hippopotamus, but then she remembered how small she was now, and she soon made out that it was only a mouse that had flipped in like herself. Would it be of any use now, thought Alice, to speak to this mouse? Everything is so out of the way down here that I should think very likely it can talk. At any rate, there's no harm in trying. So she began, Oh, Mouse, do you know the way out of this pool? I am very tired of swimming about here. Oh, Mouse. Alice thought this must be the right way of speaking to a mouse. She had never done such a thing before, but she remembered having seen in her brother's Latin grammar, a mouse of a mouse, to a mouse, oh, mouse. The mouse looked at her rather inquisitively and seemed to her to wink with one of its little eyes, but it said nothing. Perhaps it doesn't understand English, thought Alice. I dare say it's a French mouse, come over with William the Conqueror. For with all of her knowledge of history, Alice had no very clear notion how long ago anything had happened. So she began again. Oui, est ma chat? Which was the first sentence in her French lesson book. The mouse gave a sudden leap out of the water and seemed to quiver all over with fright. Oh, I beg your pardon, cried Alice hastily, afraid that she had hurt the poor animal's feelings. I quite forgot you didn't like cats. Not like cats, cried the mouse in a shrill, passionate voice. Would you like cats if you were me? Well, perhaps not, said Alice in a soothing tone. Don't be angry about it. And yet I wish I could show you our cat Dinah. I think you'd take a fancy to cats if you could only see her. She is such a dear, quiet thing, Alice went on, half to herself, as she swam lazily about in the pool. And she sits purring so nicely by the fire, licking her paws and washing her face. And she is such a nice, soft thing to nurse. And she's such a capital one for catching mice. Oh, I beg your pardon, cried Alice again, for this time the mouse was bristling all over, and she felt certain it must be really offended. We won't talk about her any more if you'd rather not. We indeed, cried the mouse, who was trembling down to the end of his tail, as if I would talk on such a subject. Our family always hated cats, nasty, low, vulgar things. Don't let me hear the name again. I won't, said Alice, in a great hurry to change the subject of conversation. Are you fond of dogs? The mouse did not answer, so Alice went on eagerly. There is such a nice little dog near our home, I would like to show you. A little bright-eyed terrier, you know, with, oh, such long, curly brown hair. And it'll fetch things when you throw them, and it'll sit up and beg for its dinner, and all sorts of things. I can't remember half of them. And it belongs to a farmer, you know, and he says it's so useful, it's worth 100 pounds. He says it kills all the rats, and, oh, dear, cried Alice in a sorrowful tone. I'm afraid I've offended it again, for the mouse was swimming away from her as hard as it could go, and making quite a commotion in the pool as it went. So she called softly after it, Mouse, dear, do come back again, and we won't talk about cats or dogs either, if you don't like them. When the mouse heard this, it turned round and swam slowly back to her. Its face was quite pale, with passion, Alice thought. And it said in a low, trembling voice, Let us get to the shore, and then I'll tell you my history, and you'll understand why it is I hate cats and dogs. It was high time to go, for the pool was getting quite crowded with the birds and animals that had fallen into it. There was a duck and a dodo, a lory and an eaglet, and several other curious creatures. Alice led the way, and the whole party swam to shore. And that's the end of Alice in Wonderland Chapter 2, The Pool of Kids.
I saw it written and I saw it say, Bingo Moon is on his way. None of you stand so tall. Bingo Moon, then I get you all on the Bingo Moon.
That's a wrap on today's episode of The Baby Bunker. Thanks for joining me, Chloe, and Grace as we went into uncharted territory, all while sitting right next to the radio. Don't forget to keep adventuring and exploring, and I'll see you next week.
So I written and I saw it say, Bingo Moon is on its way. None of you stand so tall. Bingo Moon, then I get you home.